Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode on, what is it called, Matt? It's called Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. We are Uncanny Treks. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. This is the world's most mutated podcast, and it's a very special episode because it's our penultimate episode about Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 1. Can you believe it, Matt? We're already to the penultimate.
The way they dump these episodes, I don't know if I like it yet. I haven't decided.
Did I tell you about my experience of seeing the film The Brutalist? I promise this will be relevant.
No, Bob, you haven't told me, but go ahead.
Not a good movie. Very pretty movie, and amazingly that it's so pretty for so cheap, but not a good movie. B, I have long been an advocate for intermission breaks in movies that go over 3 hours. I really like Martin Scorsese's films, but I have been very bitter about seeing films like The Irishman and Killers of the Flower Moon in theaters when they're over 3 hours. And I remember making fun of Martin Scorsese because he and Apple apparently sued a theater in Germany that imposed an intermission in the middle of Killers of the Flower Moon. So I was, man, Scorsese, you need to calm down. But Matt, I have to say he may be right, because I saw The Brutalist. The Brutalist is also over 3 hours, but they do give you a 15-minute intermission. But I got to be honest, man, it kills the immersion. It really does. Like, I and my two friends, we were sitting in front of these two older ladies, and they weren't really talking in the first half, and they were talking so much in the second half. You could just tell it had, like, broken the immersion for them.
I took them completely out of it. Intermissions don't work with our minds anymore.
I'm in a very small minority in elite coastal cities that got to see The Irishman and Killers of the Flower Moon in theaters, because those were primarily made, Irishman for Netflix and Killers of the Flower Moon for Apple. Primarily, they're existing as streaming. And that is the paradox of, on the one hand, Scorsese wants to maintain the purity and the unity of the cinematic experience, but in reality, mostly this is made for streaming, where people will impose their own breaks on it anyway.
I think do whatever they want. Wash the dishes during the middle of the film. Gets too boring. Exactly. Cut it off. I'll come back later to it.
On the one hand, I still think I like this release model. I still think this is the bright balance, because I do think that just one episode a week is too little. I think stretching in this day and age, I think stretching a season release out over 2, 3, 4 months, it doesn't keep the buzz going. It doesn't keep the momentum going. I have a good focus, but bad memory. It's hard for me to remember what's happened in the season over the course of 3 months. But on the other hand, as we know, oh God, it sucks to dump it all at once, right? Binging sucks. I think we both would have enjoyed Caped Crusader more if it had been spaced out.
We just started this and it's almost over. It's over within, 4 weeks?
Just a month. And I do agree with you that it is hard, because I like this show and I think I like it more than you. It does a bit feel a chore to me, especially this week and last week when it's 3 episodes.
Right. And I did have to split it between 2 nights.
The ideal move would actually just be 2 episodes a week. I think that's the right pace for this.
Did they do that with X-Men, the first X-Men 97, like the first episode, the first one dropped and then the episode 2 dropped the same week? I believe they did. X-Men dropping weekly left me craving every week for more. So that weekly schedule, if it's something that you're going to have really good stuff at the cliffhangers at the end, just maybe talking and chatting about it, really like that model. I'm more of that. I go in that direction, whereas you're more like a 2 a week.
I'll also say there is a big difference between a 10-episode season weekly and a 13-episode season weekly.
Right. And there's also a difference in quality, which we'll talk about here.
And one other thing I just want to say, though, to make the distinction. Obviously, I also think X-Men 97 is better than this show, although I like this show a lot. But in a way, it's a little bit of a false comparison, just in the sense that X-Men 97 is basically season 6 of a well-established show. And so they can skip to the climax instances in some way.
You're absolutely right, Bob. But see, I'm still trying to think of this Spider-Man as some extension of 94 or some other Spider-Man I've seen before, the other 14 series you've seen. You mentioned last week.
I've only really watched 3 Spider-Man cartoons. I've watched
Spectacular.
I've watched 94. I've seen 2 or 3 episodes of all the others.
I've watched a lot of Amazing Friends for some reason, and I don't know why. We used to be able to get those from the library.
I think one of us had a tape that had like two or three episodes.
I had a tape, yes, but I feel like we could also rent them from the library at some point because there were so many episodes of that show. Or maybe they aired it on Cartoon Network in like a big block.
I definitely saw some episodes, but I don't think I saw that many.
They're not memorable.
With the advent of Disney Plus, I tried to watch some. Oh boy, it's a chore.
That's rough, chore. Well, Bob, let's go into this show because you mentioned a chore, but I want to stress, I don't think it's as much a chore as you're making it out to be.
You're the one who says it's a chore, the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. I don't say it's a chore. I said just the fact of having three episodes to watch and then podcast.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
No, well, I think in general,
I'm just trying to twist your words a little.
Not that you're that negative on it, but I'm more positive on the show than you. Episode 6, Duel with the Devil. Matt, we see Jeannie Foucault. She's sneaking around Oscorp Labs. Does she seem like she's up to something? Any theories about what she's up to?
We talked a little about these characters last episode, or maybe the previous one. We broke them. We learned who each one was. She's the daughter of Taskmaster in the comics, right? She has similar abilities. She becomes the Finesse, who I think is a part of like the new Avengers Academy or something.
In the 2010s, they had, I think, Avengers Academy, and then it was Battle Royale or Hunger Games with all the teen superheroes of Avengers. I think they called it like Avengers Island.
God, that was a weird time.
That's supposed to be a pretty good series, but I never read it, so I can't really comment.
Well, see, Bob, if this is an MCU adjacent universe or whatever we're calling it, then that totally can't happen because Taskmaster is actually Antonio Dracov, who's the daughter of the main villain in the Black Widow film. And she's also going to appear in the upcoming Thunderbolts film. You have this character who has a very specific identity in the comic books, but they don't have that same identity in the MCU, but then they have it in the alternate universe.
Can I ask first an observation, and then I'm going to ask you a more philosophical question. Yeah. I do have to give it up to the MCU in this sense. I've basically stopped watching the MCU. Whenever I recommend this show to friends, look, it's not the MCU. It doesn't matter. That's the only reason I'm watching it. If it were in the MCU, I wouldn't be watching it. So I've basically given up the MCU. Granted, that's a relatively new thing, right?
Right.
But I am impressed that I've only skipped more than two movies, but I haven't skipped that much more than two movies, right?
Right.
I definitely didn't see Black Widow. I definitely didn't see the last two Spider-Man movies. Has Thunderbolts already come out? I'm definitely not going to see it.
No.
Okay. I'm definitely not going to see Thunderbolts, though. But I am somewhat mystified that, like, I've skipped so little. I've only skipped two movies you're talking about. I'm already totally lost about what you're talking about.
Put this way, Bob. If you don't keep up with it, it just becomes a big tangled mess. They're trying to fix that with this Captain America film that just dropped. Make it like it's Big Bad Red Hulk versus Captain America. But it's not working.
I wouldn't mind watching this movie if they hadn't made that stupid Winter Soldier and Falcon series. I'm not going to watch that series, and I'm not going to watch stuff that comes after it that presupposes I should have seen that series. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest too, Bob. I saw Black Widow, and I had to go look up everything about Taskmaster, so that should tell you that it was not memorable at all.
That's the other side of this philosophical reflection is I do want to just give the MCU also props for mining parts of the Marvel Universe I just don't understand. Never been a Thunderbolts guy. I don't like the Thunderbolts. Never read it. So it's funny that there are still parts of the MCU and the DCU where I can be totally stumped by what they're doing and who the characters are. Makes me feel like a normal person for once.
Thanks, MCU. Thanks, Disney.
And then my philosophical question, Matt. Granted, the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man has followed the MCU pretty closely up to this point. You're going to talk about this again, but we've mentioned how it's referenced a lot of events from the Avengers and the Captain America movies already. Do you think it's going to continue, but it's a parallel MCU, right?
Right.
Do you think it's going to continue to track the parallel MCU, or do you think they're not going to care what Thunderbolts and Black Widow is? That's too far away from Spider-Man. It's not worth reflecting in Spider-Man. What do you think? Do you think like future MCU movies are more or less going to be reflected in this parallel timeline, or do you think it's clean start, fresh slate from here up?
It's a really good question because you're missing key characters introduced in the Spider-Man films.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because this might be a stupid question, but they haven't referenced Avengers 3 and 4 at all, right? The Infinity War ones, they haven't referenced those at all.
So this whole snap thing, he may not have been snapped.
And in a way, they almost can't, right? Because the Peter Parker in the MCU plays such a big role in those that you probably don't want to put that on this Peter Parker.
I think we're going to see parallel events, Bob. like the lineup a little bit, but you're going to see what would have happened if they're really trying to do the whole Tony Stark, Norman Osborn comparison. What happens when you get this more positive role model with Tony versus the Norman Osborn role model?
That's true. I mean, we are at the time in the MCU of this is basically the equivalent of that first Tom Hooper Spider-Man, right?
Yes, correct. So you're just going to see that, how that plays out. And maybe they do try to incorporate Infinity War, Saga, all that other
shit. I really hope not. I think that would suck.
I would think that would be terrible as well. And I don't know how they would do it. I don't even want to think about that.
That's depressing.
We already know the show has got at least three seasons,
right? Oh, yeah. You know, to say something not depressing, though, Bob, about this show, the style of the comic book panel.
Oh, it's great.
The way it's, oh my gosh, that is amazing. It's like reading a comic. It feels like I'm back in the 90s with the pages and everything. But also the title cards. I love title cards. Man, Batman the Animated Series had them. They were always top notch. These are great because they're emulating actual comic book covers, but with the characters and the style of the show. Love it.
Yeah, this show did a really good job of taking inspiration from the comics and taking inspiration from Spider-Verse, the two animated movies.
Right.
But also going in a different direction. And so it doesn't just feel like a total clone or the Spider-Verse we have at home. You're definitely right that X-Men 97 is better, more engaging. But I would say aesthetically, this show is more interesting than X-Men 97. Does that make sense?
It does, with the exception of Gambit and the Sentinels.
Fair. Matt remembers it. I don't love the dog on how the show does teen drama, because I think, contrary to you, Matt, I like how it does teen drama. I do want to ask, what do you find more unbelievable? Three Gen Alpha kids being excited about watching VHS tapes, or three Gen Alpha kids and a couple of them being offended that someone is on a phone?
Bob, both threw me for a loop. I'm not sure if the writers were able to hit the friendship parts of this show right. It's too fast paced for me, but maybe that's how high schoolers work in today. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I think I'm just too old for their to understand what they're doing.
Here's my theory. I was going to bring this up later, but I think it makes sense to bring it up now. One of the reasons I think I like this show is it's, and I think one of the reasons you're kind of disliking the show is that the superhero stuff actually hasn't progressed at all. Basically, Norman and Peter's relationship is pretty much the same as it's been from the start of episode 3. And in a real sense, since it's been from episode 1, Norman is still not close to being the Green Goblin. Maybe he will be by the end of the season, but I wouldn't necessarily bet on it. Otto is still not fully Doc Ock. Lonnie is still, it seems, a long way away from being Tombstone. Maybe he'll be Tombstone by the end of the season, maybe not. So the superhero stuff hasn't changed that much at all. We still don't even have the Rhino. But they are doing a lot of changes with the character beats. The relationships between Peter, Nico, Lonnie, Harry, and Pearl are really fast churning. And so I think that's where the show is trying to make up for the relative slowness in the superhero plots. They're going to turbocharge the personal plots. Does that make sense?
They're wanting to slow drip the superhero stuff. I bet they have a lot of great stuff. They just don't want to give it to us all at once.
And
that's my theory,
a way,
which is why they have three seasons.
In a way, it's the same problem as Creature Commandos, where it's, oh, you're in a shared universe and you don't want to go too fast and you want to hold stuff back. Although I still think this is a better solution than Creature Commandos, because they're still at least telling separate stories and they at least are not doing, you know, every episode is a flashback and all 10 episodes are one thing, right?
I'd really love an episode just about Norman Osborn, and then an episode just about Harry Osborn, and an episode just about Nico, Bob. That's how this should work, right?
Well, honestly, when you say it like that, that doesn't even sound so bad to me, which maybe is a little bit of a verdict. I don't want to knock on like B-level characters or C-level characters, but sometimes B and C level characters are B and C level for a reason, right? Like, there's just not that much to G.I. Robot. G.I. Robot, he's great. I like a robot that kills Nazis, but you don't need a flashback explaining the deal of the robot who kills Nazis. That's the most self-explanatory concept in human history.
Exactly.
I didn't have any deep thoughts about Thaddeus Ross in the show, but did you have any thoughts about Norman and Thaddeus Ross in this episode?
So they have this interaction, which we see Thaddeus Ross interacting with Tony in the MCU all the time.
Okay.
But here it's Norman. This leads to me to believe that Norman is wanting to build super soldiers or weapons, a la Ultimate Spider-Man.
See? Yeah, so they are maybe doing Norman is like evil Tony Stark in two senses then, of both as evil mentor to Peter and, as you were talking about last week, trying to do his evil Avengers or his slingers, right?
They like call them that. It's going to be so bad. Oh, God. Please don't call them that.
My marker would be that they won't call them that in the show. They might name an episode that. Yeah. That would be my marker.
But maybe Spider-Man will sling them, and that'll be why it's called slingers. He slings them with his whip.
So apologies for a really dumb question, Matt. I don't remember Captain America 3 Civil War very well. Thaddeus Ross is a character in that movie.
Ross has been a character throughout. Thaddeus Ross is also...
I guess he's in the Hulk movie, too.
He's in the Hulk movie. That's Harrison Ford's character.
I know he's going to be Red Hulk, but he's been played by like three different actors now.
Correct, yes. He was one of the first characters established in the original Incredible Hulk, first film that came out.
Originally, he's a major supporting character in Hulk, even before he's Red Hulk.
Correct. So him meeting with Osborn here, this places us around, this takes place after Civil War because Cap is on the run.
On to a character I actually care about, Matt. Did you love how they did Daredevil's radar sense and his fight with Spider-Man as much as I did? Because I loved it, dog.
Everything with Daredevil was great. If this is how they're going to be writing him in the upcoming series, I'm on board for it, Bob. I think you need to as well.
Yeah, for sure. Matt, out of my enthusiasm for Daredevil in this cartoon, you got me agreeing to something that I don't want to do. I don't want to watch The Daredevil Born Again because I can't finish the Netflix Daredevil, because I can't have something on my serialized account that's Marvel _S Daredevil. That's so stupid.
But you have to record that you've watched it. That's what bothers you. If you watched it and didn't put it on your serialized, that could never happen, right, Bob?
Well, I don't mind having it on my dropped because I did watch the first two seasons of Daredevil way back when.
So as long as it sucks. That's what you're saying.
How many seasons did it actually go? Did it just go three? Do you remember?
I think three. I don't remember off the top of my head, but yeah.
Also, you're trying to sucker me into something crazy. Isn't Born Again going to be 20 episodes or something insane?
Maybe we'll watch it. Watch the first couple episodes, see if it's good, and then we'll go from there. But I will say this, Bob. Him showing up in She-Hulk was a highlight.
It was great. And the cool thing about this, I mean, it's just a very strong animated representation of Daredevil, and especially, I'd have to go back and check, but I'm pretty sure the Daredevil cameos in Spider-Man 94 and Fantastic Four 96 or 95 were not good, I'm pretty sure. In some ways, okay, maybe the first really good animated Daredevil we've gotten. I'm sure maybe there's been other animated Daredevil I'm not thinking of. But the other thing I really like that I don't think the comics have ever fully been able to do is it's been so long since Spider-Man's been a teen in the comic that it's more usually that Spider-Man and Daredevil in the comics are both adults. They're both more or less equals, even though Daredevil is obviously older and he's more life experience than Spider-Man, but Spider-Man was also Spider-Man before Daredevil. So they never really play off the age gap, and getting to see the age gap played off here in a way I'm pretty sure the Silver Age never does is really cool.
Yeah, it is cool because, I mean, it's really hard to figure out how you're going to get a high school kid and a lawyer to, like, get together.
Usually it's just Matt Murdock has to be the attorney for Flash Thompson or Aunt May. I did also just want to shout out him KOing Spider-Man with his baton. That was great.
Oh, yeah. It's always nice to see that.
One reason I'm really enjoying the kid plot lines, the teen plot lines, is these scenes of people just all finding out that Peter is Spider-Man. The Harry one is great. The Nico one is almost as good as the Harry one. It's not quite as funny, because it's not quite as clean, right? It's a little more drawn out, but it's still really funny. I'm really enjoying Peter just blowing his secret identity constantly.
So, but I got to ask you, in 2025, is this a commentary on how much more difficult it is for us to hide our identity?
On one hand, sure. But on the other, neither of these have much of anything to do with contemporary technology. In a deep sense, like, Norman catching him on the security camera. Yeah. But even that could have happened in the 20th century. Obviously, superhero stories are not realistic and should not strive to be realistic in many cases. But it is maybe a little bit more interpersonal realism of how good at keeping a secret would a teenager actually be, right?
That's a good point.
Matt, you were the one with the strong opinions about Scorpion last week. Any thoughts on the Scorpion costume this week?
It fits the style of the show perfectly. It's not my favorite design. That's always going to go to like the 94 costume he had. For some reason, I like that look of the different shades of green with almost a plastic.
It's really not even the animated. You had the action figure and you like that.
I love that action figure. It looked awesome. Big tail, but I hate it when it's portrayed as more bug-like. I mean, it looks more like an insect. You know, I just don't like that. or he has that shiny look that he has in the video games. I don't care for that as well either.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't really know what that shiny look is.
It's ugly. And I'm glad they didn't stick with just the Switchblade guy. That's I didn't need to be that grounded. I don't need like a Battinson or anything.
That's funny. Matt, this is really easy. Who's our character of the episode for this episode?
That would be Daredevil, Bob, considering the episode is even called Duel with the Devil. Daredevil's...
Very easy. Very easy. It is a really great promotion for Born Again, although I don't think it's enough to get me to watch it. So, episode 7, Scorpion Rising. Just to start off, Matt, I was very amused when Big Donovan was defending Tombstone, saying he loves his mother. That was cute. Speaking of families, we brought up that Nico's foster mom or den mother or whatever's last name was O'Hara. And so I wondered if, yeah, and it might still be, but I was wondering if she had any connection to Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099. And we find out that Miss O'Hara's first name is Susan in this episode.
Oh.
And so I did check on the Marvel Wiki, and nobody in Miguel O'Hara's family listed on the Marvel Wiki is named Susan, although I think they only did his parents. I don't think they even got into like his grandparents. So who knows? Maybe there's a Susan O'Hara back there somewhere.
So there wasn't an Ancestry.com tree or anything like that, Bob, that some crazy person has come up with that has all this already listed for us?
Unfortunately, no. I guess Peter doesn't have that either. I know Bruce Wayne does, and I know at least Silver Age Superman did, because they... Back in the 70s, I don't know if you remember, but to tie into the popularity of Roots, the miniseries, they did a Roots for Superman.
That was real.
Literally in the comic, I think it's Morgan Edge yelling at Perry White to do this, and he's like, it'll be like Roots for Superman.
That's so awful.
I don't think it's that bad. It's funny. Yeah, that's but funny. I don't know if it's that bad.
All right.
We have a ginger racer named Lydia here. And a street racer, a car racer, and she calls Nico Beetlejuice.
That wasn't the joke. The joke was that the ginger called her Beetlejuice, and the dude with the phone who counts them off says something good to the effect of, you meant Lydia earlier. That Lydia's the scary, creepy goth girl in the movie.
So I'm going to keep calling this ginger racer Lydia, and I'm just going to say that Lydia and I don't care about Beetlejuice that much. Neither of us went to see the new Beetlejuice remake, unlike Matt.
It was a pop culture reference that probably will never age well for anything.
I don't know. It is an older woman saying that to Nico. I think it's meant to a little bit, this older person.
Oh.
Speaking of pop culture references, though, we do have Scorpion do an Untouchables quotation, which makes me happy because I watched that movie so much when we were kids and love it so dearly, even though it's kind of dumb. It's worth rewatching. That's the Chicago way, Matt. So, Matt, what's cooler, Daredevil's baton or Scorpion's tail?
I got to go with Daredevil's baton, Bob, hands down. You can actually hold it in your hand, use it.
I would definitely go with that, too. I would say the Scorpion's tail, though, I've never seen it done this well in animation before. And, man, Spider-Man takes a beating in this episode.
Oh, yes.
And that... Getting stabbed and cut by that tail, it looks painful.
Yeah, this was very violent. I flinched at like several of the actual blows. We should try to find the most violent scene from the 94 series and compare it to what happened here in this episode.
All right, Matt, who's your character of the episode?
I'm going to go with Nico for being the Lydia Deetz of Marvel, Bob.
Well, thank you for explaining that to me, Matt. I'll be sure to promptly forget it as soon as we sign off. I'm going to give it to Norman this episode, Matt. Him calling in the automated goblin glider to save Spider-Man and specifically to KO Scorpion was really sick. That was awesome.
For just a second, did you think he was going to come down in a green goblin armor?
Oh, you know I did. You know I did. One other thing about potential goblins I was going to say, you probably didn't read this, but do you remember the Untold Tales of Spider-Man comic, right?
I remember that.
There's a one-off villain in that series who I also think they bring back a very, very little bit in the 90s comics around the time we were reading, although I don't think either of us read these when we were kids. I just read this when I was reading all the original 60s Amazing Spider-Man last year, and I also read Untold Tales of Spider-Man at that same time. But there's a single issue where Spider-Man fights a villain who I think normally gets called the Proto-Goblin. And it's a different dude who Norman has, like, basically do the trial run for the Green Goblin stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I do admit, I kind of don't think that's the best idea, right? It's a little too prequel-y. But that said, it is the type of character that would have made sense in this moment, right? Not that I really thought they were going to bring in the Proto-Goblin. My mind racing, okay, they're probably not structurally going to bring in the Green Goblin. Maybe they'd bring in the Proto-Goblin, but probably not.
This is a perfect place where you could have put Proto-Goblin. I remember Proto-Goblin.
Oh, you do? Okay,
I do,
wow.
Yes. Because I remember, no, because the one time when I was doing Clone Saga research. I like just went and I looked up every goblin. There's so many.
Okay. So it might have been more you fell down a wiki.
Yeah, I fell down a goblin hole, Bob. I did. A goblin hole. And I just swimming through it.
Matt, please, I want to keep doing this podcast with you for a long time. So the next time you're in a goblin hole, please have protection on.
Yeah, I will, Bob. I will. And I'll
thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Ride my glider out of it.
Exactly. All right, Matt. Episode 8, Tangled Web. Do you remember what the Tangled Web comic was?
It was like an anthology comic where like different creative teams that aren't usually associated with Spider-Man. They would tell stories, and it's like Ed Brubaker. We did one. Garth Ennis did one, I believe.
Garth Ennis definitely did one. It was very weird and not very good, but very interesting. I don't think it was Brubaker. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he did at some point, but I think you're thinking of Greg Rucka.
Get Rucka and Brubaker mixed up all the time. Every single episode we do. If their name is mentioned, I mix them up.
Well, I mean, they did work together on Caped Crusader and Gotham Central, and they are friends, so.
Oh, they're probably the same dude drawing paycheck under two names.
Nah, I've met them both. They're both very nice guys.
Damn it, Bob. Why you got to be so logical about this?
Rucka's wife is also, she's a very nice lady. I had a good conversation with her at Emerald City like 12 years ago. God, I'm old.
Jesus. Well, all right, Bob. Well, I didn't know you had such a good relationship with these two people.
Well, no, none of them would remember me, but I just had good conversations with all three of them at Emerald Cities 12 years ago.
That's a comic book shop, right?
Maybe Once Upon a Time, but a lot of our comic shops have closed. No, it's the big comic convention that Seattle has every year.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
We have Emerald City Comic Con, and Portland has Rose City, but I've never been to Rose City, unfortunately.
That the Tangled Web series, Bob, was there something specific you wanted to, you remember about?
Oh, yeah. It was kind of like the Legends of the Dark Knight for Spider-Man, right. But where Legends started in like 89, Tangled Web started in the early aughts. And you're definitely right that I think more so than Legends of the Dark Knight, it had this indie vibe. I want to say David Lapham did an arc for Tangled Web too.
At one point, we get a mention of something that I wanted to bring up. They say that Otto stole a unique alloy from Osborn to create his weapons. What do you think that is, Bob? What do you think that is?
Well, Matt, what music do you want to cue here?
I want to hear. What could it be, Bob?
Conversely to you, Matt, I want to cue the theme music from the Black Panther movie, but I don't remember what it is.
Vibranium?
I remember what adamantium and vibranium are. Okay, I remember the important stuff. I don't remember what the notes are on the Black Panther theme.
They all sound about the same. All the Avengers themes sound the same to me. I'm sorry. I don't know if that's a tone deaf thing for me or like, I don't know.
Neither of us are really musically inclined, but I do think the MCU scores are pretty generic.
Oh, they are. They are totally, especially when they start applying the same types of music to the video games and then you're questioning yourself whether or not you've heard this theme before or not. And you're like, wait a minute. They all sound the same to me.
Well, Matt, so this was an episode, you know, it kind of lived up to Tangled Web. Less in the sense of an anthology and more just in the sense of, like, you might call a romance comic featuring Spider-Man's cast, Tangled Web, because there's a lot of emotional conversations this episode. But I know you don't want to talk about those, so I'll just skip to an emotional conversation for me, which is to say Iron Man shows up and it really depressed me, Matt. It really made me melancholy. I really hate seeing Iron Man.
Also, you weren't sad. See, I thought you were sad.
No,
because
I was sad. Well, I was sad and I was enraged. Yeah, but.
Oh, okay. Because I know you're upset that RGJ has had to go on to do bigger and better things outside these superhero projects.
It's an interesting question because I do think that the MCU wastes a lot of great actors' time and talent. Like Scarlett Johansson would be a good example of that.
Yes.
Robert Downey Jr. was a fun character actor before Iron Man, but it's not like I think he's some amazing actor that we're really missing out on. Robert Downey Jr. doing a series of lawyer movies or a series of action movies instead of the MCU.
Yeah, but come on, he's gonna be the lead. He was the lead hero in on one end, Bob, as Iron Man, and now he's gonna turn around and be the lead villain on the other end of the spectrum. Come on.
Oh, don't get me wrong. That's stupid, and I'm not gonna watch it. But
come on.
In terms of like squandered talent, like I can feel bad about like squandering the talent of ScarJo, or I can feel bad about squandering the talent of who plays Lady Thor?
Natalie Portman.
Yeah, squandering Natalie Portman. But I can't feel too bad about squandering the talent, such as it is, of Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, Bob, you just don't have enough respect for RDJ.
After he decided to come back as Dr. Doom, how could I, Matt?
Well, he was Dr. Doolittle for a while.
That's true. That's his other great franchise legacy. There was no way in the world that their fourth run at the Fantastic Four was going to, fifth run was going to be any good. And I don't want to be one of these nerds, but Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom is just like, that's just the worst. Like, that's terrible casting. And clearly, that they just have no understanding or affection for Doom as a character.
I know this is insane, Bob, but this is the first time I've put together that Pedro Pascal's Reed Richards will be interacting with Robert Downey Jr.'s Dr. Doom if done the way they have it set up. And it's not some, like, fake out with RDJ.
Yeah, although I think they may not act. Well, in A, you're right. It's probably some sort of fake out. But B, I don't know how much they'll actually even emphasize it.
I'm interested in seeing it. I'd never really put that together, but yeah, that's scary.
Speaking of MCU garbage in this, the picture that Norman has on the wall of him and Captain America, which maybe we saw in earlier episodes, I'm not sure, but that picture made me laugh.
Right, yeah. And the whole lab, Bob, when Otto's going through it, trying to get out, that whole, he hasn't released traps in it and things to get all those people that are coming after them, the SWAT team. They need to make a playset of that, Bob. I'm just telling you right now, when they've dropped these action figures, that needs to be a playset. Otto Octavius' lab.
Are you going to put it right next to your pristine copy of the 94 Daily Bugle that we both had as kids?
Sure will, Bob. Sure will. I need to find one of those. That was a good place.
Not as good as the Blackbird toy for the X-Men 92 series, but a good playset. Well, Matt, speaking of traps, toys, merchandising opportunities, who's your character of the episode?
Well, my character of the episode is going to go to Otto Octavius. Introduced to him in the previous episodes. We get an idea he's there, but here you really learn that he's not somebody to be messed with.
That's good. No, it's a good choice. Good choice. For mine, I once again have to depart from Big Donovan. Like, I really like Big Donovan. I like his energy. I like his takes. He's got good takes. I like he's a strong mentor figure for Lonnie, just like Norman's a strong mentor figure for Peter. I think the writers of this show, they've really been listening to Jordan Peterson. They really know about the importance of strong male patriarchal mentoring in a young man's life. But I got to disagree with the patriarch Big Donovan. And I got to say that I actually think Chameleon, who looks a lot like his original appearance in Amazing Spider-Man number one, looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was an awesome design. I'm actually hoping they make an action figure of that version of Chameleon because I'll probably get that.
I hope we get to see some cool stuff from Chameleon in season two. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
And definitely a lot better than the version of Chameleon we got in the Kraven movie. Spoilers. Everyone, thanks for joining us for our penultimate episode of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. We will be back next week with episodes 9 and 10 and a little bit of reflection on the end. Not too much, but some reflection on the end. Then we'll be on to, I don't know if bigger or better, but definitely other things, more things. We hope you'll stick with Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.